chapter 46. Continuing our series through the book of Genesis. This is message number 47 in the series, entitled Peace Like a River. We'll be looking at Genesis chapter 46, and to get started, I want to read verses 1 to 4. And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. So chapter 45 that we looked at last time is the great climax of the Joseph story in Genesis. And it brings the tension and the suspense of 20 plus years to a release in that chapter. Joseph had worked out a rather elaborate plan that involved getting Benjamin to Egypt and setting up his brothers to be able to betray Benjamin like they did Joseph so many years before that, and Joseph was testing them. And so when it came to that key moment, rather than betraying Benjamin and betraying their father Jacob, Judah steps forward to offer himself in Benjamin's place, willingly giving his life for that of his brother and for his father. And so chapter 45 starts with Joseph completely overcome with emotion and no longer restraining himself. And so he reveals his identity to his brothers. And with much wisdom and understanding of God's revelation to his fathers, Joseph explains how that God sovereignly prepared the way to save Israel as a nation by sending Joseph before them to prepare for them. So Joseph held no grudge. He desired no revenge against his brothers. And he tells them that they don't need to fear him. Now, this story is obviously a very powerful story of reconciliation. And think about how many times that families and family relationships have been strained, and families have become estranged from one another for much less offenses than attempted murder and kidnapping for human trafficking. Much less offenses. People have harbored and festered grudges for years and years and years, refusing sometimes to even be in the same room with one another. And yet, here Joseph extends grace to his brothers. And he does that based on God's grace that had been extended to him as well as to them all. Well, as Christians, we are to forgive others. And we are to recognize that forgiveness flows from us to others because forgiveness has flowed to us from God. And Jesus told a parable, sometimes referred to as the parable of the two debtors. He told a parable in Matthew chapter number 18 about forgiveness, and this is just a little part of it in verses 32 and 33. Then his Lord, after that he had called him, said unto him, O thou wicked servant, I forgave thee all that debt because thou desirest me. Shouldest not thou also have had compassion on thy fellow servant, even as I had pity on thee? And of course, in that parable, there's one man that owes a great astronomical debt he could never possibly hope to repay, and it's forgiven to him. And then he goes out and finds another man that owes him just a very small amount, and he didn't have it on him, but he needed a little bit of time to pay it, and he had him thrown into prison. And so this is what the reference is to. Should you have not also have had compassion on your fellow servant because I had pity on you? Well, Paul told the church at Ephesus, in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 31 and 32, he wrote, Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. And notice this last part, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Well, Joseph illustrates that kind of grace and forgiveness. He had received it from God. He extended it to his brothers. And he'll have a little more to say about that, not in this chapter, but in another chapter upcoming. So chapter 45 ends with Joseph's brothers returning to Canaan to get Jacob, and they were provided for to be able to move the entire family to Egypt. And that's where we pick up here in chapter number 46. And chapter 46 gives us this long-awaited reunion of Jacob with his beloved son, Joseph. But that scene doesn't come until almost the end of the chapter. So first we get this vision that Jacob had, and then we get a lengthy genealogy. And the vision further emphasizes God's sovereignty and his purpose in all that is taking place, and also highlights that God's promises are being fulfilled and will be fulfilled in the future. The genealogy gives us an important record of the beginning of the nation of Israel in Egypt, as well as tracing the lineage of the Messiah. Now, this chapter, it is an important part of Israel's history, and it is an assurance to that generation on the plains of Moab for whom the chapter has particular significance. They were brought out of Egypt, and they were about to enter into the promised land. And here's a promise how that Israel went into Egypt and that God will bring them out again. So we want to look at this chapter in two parts, verses 1 to 27, which gives us the bulk of the chapter and the long genealogy passage where we see the sons of Israel. Verses 28 to 34, Jacob and Joseph reunited. So let's begin with the first part, and we'll look at verses 1 to 4 again. And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. So this chapter opens with Jacob's journey. He's setting off to head toward the south and toward the land of Egypt to see his son Joseph. And as he's going to the south, he comes to Beersheba, which obviously has been a place of significance going all the way back to Abraham and even with his father Isaac. And we do get the mention of his father Isaac here in this passage. And that mention is interesting. Since Isaac was tempted to go to Egypt, just as his father Abraham had done during a famine, but God told him not to go into Egypt. That's chapter 26, verses 1 to 2. So Jacob is stopping off. He's offering sacrifices to the God of his father, and that's showing this covenantal continuity with Jacob, just as God had been with Abraham and with Isaac and now with Jacob. And so here at Beersheba, God spoke to Jacob in a vision at night. And this is the last appearance of God to speak in the book of Genesis. And from this point, it will be about 430 years before God appears again and speaks. And of course, that is with Moses when God appears in the burning bush in the wilderness. Now, there's no record or any indication of God speaking to any of Jacob's sons. Now, he did give Joseph dreams, and he obviously gave Joseph extraordinary wisdom, but he did not appear and speak to Joseph. So God confirmed to Jacob that going to Egypt was a part of his plan. Obviously, Jacob had, even though he wanted to be reunited with Joseph, he must have had some sort of reservations at least in mind about going to Egypt, and he didn't need to fear that God would forsake him or that God would forsake his promises to him if he went to the land of Egypt. In fact, God had promised Abraham that the nation from him would sojourn in a strange country for 400 years and that they would suffer there, but that they would also come out a great nation. That's back in chapter 15, verses 13 and 14. Now, he says here that he's going to make them a great nation. That's at the end of verse number 3. And he actually uses the word in the singular here, the word goy or goyim, which oftentimes in the mouth of someone that's Jewish can be an insult that is hurled at non-Jews. Typically, the word goyim, which would be the plural, refers to the nations, non-Israelite nations in the word. Now, goy is sometimes applied to Israel, though not extremely often. It is here, one of those rare references. And what it highlights is it highlights Israel as a proper nation. In other words, there's an ethnic dimension to a nation in the Bible. There is a political dimension to a nation in the Bible. And there is a geographic dimension to a nation in the Bible. And Israel is going to grow into that. Israel will be one of the goy of the world, though most often they are referred to by the Am or the Ami. They are the Lord's nation, usually given with that possessive, his nation, his people. But just as he promised to Abraham, God promises to Jacob, he's going to bring them back out. They're going to come back out of the land of Egypt. They're going to come back to the land that had been promised to them. And he's confirming this promise to Jacob. Jacob, you don't need to fear to go down into Egypt. Obviously, this is a part of God's plan. And he's not going to forget and leave this people there. He's going to make a great nation of them in the land of Egypt. And then he's going to bring them back out. Now, the last promise that is given here that Joseph would put his hand upon his eyes, this is essentially a promise to him that he would die in peace in Egypt. Putting his hand on his eyes by his son is a customary practice referring to closing the eyes of the dead. He's going to die in peace in Egypt. And it's almost like you could hear the writer of Hebrews adding, not having received the promises. Not yet. Not yet. But he's going to die in peace in Egypt. So let me come to verses 5 to 7. And Jacob rose up from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried Jacob their father and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And they took their cattle and their goods which they had gotten in the land of Canaan and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his seed with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his seed brought he with him into Egypt. So after this vision and this assurance and this confirmation that Jacob received after he had offered sacrifices to the God of Isaac, the God of Abraham. After all this confirmation, his family travel on to Egypt. And you notice there's a reference to his seed, to all of his seed. And a reference to all of his seed is a covenantal reference to God's promises. Jacob had a large family, and Jacob had abundant possessions, and he had them because of God's promises to bless Abraham, to bless Isaac, and to bless Jacob, and to make him great. And certainly as Jacob goes down into Egypt, that blessing is evident in his life. And then we get to this genealogy section here that runs beginning at verse 8 all the way through verse 27. So let's go ahead and read this section. And these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt, Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and the sons of Reuben, Hanok and Phallu, and Hezron and Carmi, and the sons of Simeon, Yamul and Yamin, and Ohad and Yachin, and Zohar and Shaul, the son of a Canaanitish woman, and the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, and the sons of Judah, Er and Onan, and Shelah, and Phares and Zerah. But Er and Onan died in the land of Canaan. And the sons of Phares were Hezron and Hamul. And the sons of Issachar, Tola and Fuva and Job and Shimron. And the sons of Zebulun, Sered and Elon and Yachliel. These be the sons of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob in Paddan Aram with his daughter Dinah. All the souls of his sons and his daughters were 30 and 3. And the sons of Gad, Ziphion, and Haggai, and Shuni, and Esbon, Eri, and Arodi, and Areli. And the sons of Asher, Yimnah, and Ishua, and Isui, and Beriah, and Sarah, their sister. And the sons of Beriah, Eber, and Machiel. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah, his daughter. And these she bare unto Jacob, even 16 souls. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin. And unto Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, and which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And the sons of Benjamin were Bela, and Becher, and Ashbel, Gerah, and Naaman, Ahi, and Rosh, Muhim, Hupim, and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel, which were born to Jacob. All the souls were 14. And the sons of Dan, Hushim, and the sons of Naphtali, Yasiel, and Guni, and Yezer, and Shalem. These are the sons of Bilhah, which Laban gave unto Rachel his daughter, and she bare these unto Jacob. All the souls were 7. All the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt, which came out of his loins, beside Jacob's sons' wives, and all the souls were 66. And the sons of Joseph, which were born him in Egypt, were 2 souls, and all the souls of the house of Jacob, which came into Egypt, were 70. So this genealogy of Jacob demonstrates God's blessings according to his promises to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Many of these names, we know nothing more than just their names and whoever, whatever part of the family that they belong to. But this is the beginning of the nation of Israel. Israel becoming a goy, one of the goyim in the earth. And we get this reference back in Genesis chapter 35 and verse number 11, when God promised to Jacob that he would have tribes and a nation. And so we see this beginning of Israel and the beginning of the tribes of Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel. Now Moses emphasizes at the end of this genealogy the number 70 as the number of the family of Jacob in Egypt. Now, obviously, there is a connection here on back toward Genesis chapter number 10, where we have the table of 70 nations. There's also a connection here forward as we go to Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse number 8, which reads, "When the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel." Now, Moses' reference in Deuteronomy is again back to Genesis chapters 10 and 11. We have the table of nations in chapter 10. We have the Tower of Babel in chapter number 11 when God confused the languages and scattered them. But it wasn't just sort of a chaotic scattering. God divided their language and divided to these nations their inheritances. That's what Moses tells us in Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse number 8. So those 70 nations were the original nations that God formed after the flood and after the Tower of Babel. And one of the nations that was not in that table of nations is the nation of Israel. They did not exist as a nation at that time. And it was that God called out Abraham out of his family, out of his nation, out of his kindred, out of his country, and said, "I'm going to make a new nation of you." That would be the nation of Israel. And so there's a correspondence here we see between the 70 souls of Egypt, that's the beginning of the nation of Israel in Egypt, and these 70 nations of the world. Why? Because God promised to Abraham that he would bless all the nations of the earth through Abraham. And how's he going to accomplish that? Well, he's going to accomplish that particularly through the nation of Israel, his chosen nation, his heritage, his choice nation, his people. He's going to bless the nations of the earth through his nation of Israel. So, this is in this passage that we are reading in Genesis 46, and we get this genealogy, and again, these genealogies are not just a bare record of names, but they're actually showing us how this is being fulfilled. God's promises are in process of being fulfilled, but also foreshadows future fulfillment that will come in Egypt and even beyond that. And what we think, when we think about Egypt, and we think about Joseph being made the governor over Egypt, and we think about all of the great stores in Egypt and all the countries round about that were coming there for food, you realize that Egypt had already been blessed by Joseph being there, and they would further be blessed for blessing Israel and for hosting them. And that comes out a little later on, not in this particular chapter. So that brings us now to the last part of the chapter, verses 28 to 34, where we finally get this reunion between Jacob and Joseph. So let's start with verses 28 to 30. "And he sent Judah before him unto Joseph to direct his face unto Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. And Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, to Goshen and presented himself unto him. And he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said unto Joseph, Now let me die, since I have seen thy face, because thou art yet alive." So one note as we begin this part before this reunion is we continue to see Judah as emerging as the leader among the tribes of Israel. And this is obviously foreshadowing the blessing that is to come on him before we close out the book of Genesis. But it also, once again, continues to bring that emphasis back to his conversion. We noticed how in this Joseph story at the end of Judas, at the end of Genesis, that Judah actually has sort of a secondary story that's running along as well. And so we get contributions to that, even in seeing Judah being mentioned as the one going before Jacob and preparing that way into Goshen. Now, this long-awaited reunion of Jacob and Joseph takes place. And all of those verses, all that lengthy section, and all those names of genealogy that we read through here. And then we get this reunion of Jacob and Joseph, and we barely get a couple of verses about it. We don't have a lengthy explanation. But what Moses does do is that he quickly captures the overwhelming emotion of the moment. So Joseph, it says, presents himself, falls upon the neck of his father, and they just both wept for a good long while. And I imagine all of us can understand and just sort of empathize with that particular moment. And again, Moses doesn't give us long speeches and long descriptions and long drawn-out things, but he does give us the words of Jacob in verse number 30 when he speaks to Joseph and says, "Now let me die, since I have seen thy face, because thou art yet alive." Now from this time, Jacob would actually live for another 17 years before he died. But he's expressing here his happiness and the completeness of his life at this reunion that he had never imagined would take place. But what he also does here is he offsets the previous expressions of his grief. So you go back to chapter 37 and verse 35 when he first is brought the coat of Joseph and he has to come to the conclusion that some wild beast has attacked and torn him apart and devoured him and he will never see him again and that he's going to go to his grave weeping and mourning for his son. In chapter 42, when the brothers return from Egypt and they tell about what they had to say about Benjamin and the need to bring him back and him talking about how he's going to bring his gray hairs down to the grave if they deprive him of Benjamin, chapter 42 and verse 38. And then the brothers themselves repeat this mourning and sorrow and bringing Jacob to the grave in sorrow in chapter 44, verses 29 and 31. And now we get this statement. He says, "Now let me die, since I have seen thy face, because thou art yet alive." And we see how that his great and tremendous grief was turned into joy and rejoicing. And of course, that doesn't always happen in this life, but it certainly is a picture of what will assuredly happen in the life to come when all griefs and sorrows are erased forevermore. Look at verses 31 to 34. And Joseph said unto his brethren and unto his father's house, I will go up and show Pharaoh and say unto him, my brethren and my father's house, which were in the land of Canaan, are come unto me. And the men are shepherds, for their trade have been to feed cattle, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And it shall come to pass, when Pharaoh shall call you and shall say, what is your occupation? That ye shall say, thy servant's trade hath been about cattle from our youth even until now, both we and also our fathers, that ye may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians. So this chapter ends yet again with another glimpse into Joseph's wisdom and how he is wisely arranging for this inevitable meeting between his family and Pharaoh, and he is preparing them. And again, he's not presenting anything deceptive or unethical or anything of the sort, but he wants to make sure that they emphasize to Pharaoh that they indeed are shepherds. They keep flocks and herds. That has been their mainstay, you know, for generations in this family. And he points out again that shepherds were an abomination unto the Egyptians. I haven't been able to find out a whole lot about that in ancient Egypt. A lot of speculation about this and about that. But as far as historical reference, just haven't been able to find out a whole lot about them. In other words, why they were viewed as such an abomination to the Egyptians. I don't know, really. But the fact that they were ensured that Jacob and this fledgling nation of Israel would have their own land. They would be distinct and set apart even within Egypt. And they would have room to grow and to multiply into a great nation without competing for resources with the nations of Canaan, which had been a continual problem, even going back to Abraham and Lot back in Genesis chapter number 13. But it also provided for Israel to maintain their ethnic identity, to maintain their nation without intermingling with Egypt and being assimilated into that nation until they existed no more. So even here we see the providence of God in ordering these events and orchestrating all of these different events together. And again, I don't know the history of how the ancient Egyptians viewed shepherds and those that kept the flocks and herds. I don't know the history of that. I don't know what all was involved in that, but I do know in God's providence that that was true of that ancient nation and was something that God used in order to provide for and to preserve his people, to make them a great nation that he had promised all the way back to Abraham. So chapter 46 resolves many of the prior threats and obstacles to God's promises being fulfilled. And we've noted along the way how this has just been a consistent theme through the story of the patriarchs, how they have been tested in various ways, and there were all of these obstacles and threats to God's promises that seemed to be insurmountable, and in many cases certainly were insurmountable, humanly speaking. But the point is that God overcomes, that God provides for his people, that God provides for his word to be fulfilled. Even at many times as they come up against these seemingly immovable, insurmountable obstacles that just seem to be in the way, denying God's promises from coming true, yet time and again, God overcame those obstacles and those problems. And we see a lot of that resolving together here in chapter number 46. And the fact that God does this for the sake of his word and for the sake of his own name. And that is good for everyone who puts their trust in him. Sometimes people are offended at such a notion. Oh, well, you're telling me that everything that God does is for his own sake? Everything that God does is for the sake of his own name? Everything that God does is for the sake of his own will? And yes, that's absolutely true. But it's also good for us that it is so. Just as we close in the Old Testament in the book of Malachi with that promise that I am the Lord God, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. They will never cease to be and exist as a people. Even if we look at their history over the last 2,000 years and how much hatred and antisemitism and all of these things that have existed against them, and it's almost inexplicable. Why are these people hated so much as they are, and yet they have been? But that hatred, once again, has also ensured their preservation and continuance as a people. It would seem to be exactly the opposite, but it hasn't been. And so God does these things for his sake, and that is good for all of those who trust in him. We get a mention of Judah and Phares in this chapter and in this genealogy. And ultimately, of course, that is the line of David. That is the line of Jesus Christ. And so we certainly see this line being preserved, that promised seed, all the way back to the Garden of Eden in Genesis chapter 3 and verse number 15, the seed of the woman. Well, these events that happened thousands of years ago in a land that is even thousands of miles away from us still have meaning today and still have meaning into eternity, because God has made promises that he has kept and will keep. God has promised to save everyone who, for instance, who repents of their sins and believe in his Son, Jesus Christ, for salvation. So what we are reading in Genesis shows us the very beginning of how he works that out, how he orders events for the salvation of Israel and the nations, and that is including us today. And last of all, in this chapter, we see how that Jacob can now die in peace. But Jacob's life has been long and hard. Jacob's life has included a mixture of blessing and sorrow. And some of the difficulty and some of the sorrow that Jacob has experienced has been due to his own sins. And Moses doesn't hide that from us in the book of Genesis. Some of it, though, has also been due to the sins of other men, due to the sins of mankind, and due to the curse that is upon the earth. In other words, the common sufferings that are common to us all. So Jacob's life has been a real mixed bag when it comes to his experiences. And he's had a lot of sorrow. And think about how the past 20-some years at this point that Jacob has been grieving the loss of his son and mourning and essentially just waiting to die and going to the grave in mourning and sadness. And that has been his expectation. But now, Jacob can die in peace. He can depart in peace, just like we are told of Abraham and just like we are told of Isaac. Well, no matter how hard that our lives have been and maybe are on this earth, no matter what our lot is, as the hymn writer put it, through faith in Jesus Christ, we can die in peace and say, it is well with my soul. And that is the testimony of Jacob.